All right, let's do it.
Good morning, everybody. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Valentine's Day. I better call Callie. Valentine's Day, February 14, 2017. And ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you again and good morning. Board, before we get to public comment number one, I would ask that we modify this agenda and we pull our two bid openings from additional items to the first two items on additional items, and we pull them up to immediately after public comment number one. We got a lot of working people in the audience that I just soon get done with that part and let them go about their day.
That's a good idea.
So let's have a motion to make that move if you, in fact, want to make that move.
I move that we modify the agenda and do bid openings first.
Second that.
Any discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. So that's what we'll do. Now, public comment number one is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so, come right up to the microphone. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we will move on to additional items, specifically the two bid openings in additional items. Darren, first one we're going to do is bid opening for the PCC pavement, graded new on Grant High, 530th Breton, Grant, whatever you want to call it, for 190th North of Gilbert. Okay.
Hand out a bid tab form for you to follow along with.
So awesome. Let's see, we've got people here for the bid openings, and we've got a delegation from Kosovo who is meeting with people around the state, just monitoring how we run elections. So we had a canvas for the Roland Story school board election, or school bond election that just happened. And so they observed that this morning, and now they're going to spend a few minutes observing the excitement that is bid openings.
I hope you
got some coffee. Okay, the first bidder is Concrete Technologies. Tyler, help me out. Is that their name that's on the bidder sheet?
Yeah.
Oh, it's on the second sheet.
Back page of what we got.
Back page.
Tell me where they're located.
They are out of Grimes, Iowa.
Okay.
Bid bond is attached and signed. Okay, total cost, $1,593,281.73. 1593281.73. The second bidder is Flynn Company. That's next on your tab. Bond is attached. I'm sorry, Flynn Company is out of Dubuque, Iowa. Bid bond is attached and signed. Okay. Total cost, $1,590,053.21. 1590053.21. Next bidder is Manette. That's the last one on the tab. Out of Brooklyn, Iowa. Bid bond is attached and signed. $1,587,077.39. 1587,077.39. Absolute Concrete. Later, Iowa, the next bidder. Back on the front page. Bid bond is attached and signed. Absolute Concrete total bid $1,871,396.73. 1871,396.73. Next bidder is Construct Incorporated out of Ames, Iowa. Bid bond is attached and signed. Total cost for Construct $1,776,139.99. 1776 139.99. And the final bidder is Godbertson Smith of Ida Grove, Iowa. Bid bond attached and signed. Total bid for Godbertson Smith is $1,662,964.80. 1662964.80. We will tabulate these, check the numbers, and bring it back next week's board agenda for award of contract.
Okay, thank you. Now we're doing the bid opening for the culvert replacement, the twin box on 190th Street. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thank you.
First bidder is Construct Incorporated out of Ames, Iowa. is on the desk and signed. Total for construct is $430,402.10. 430402.10. Next bidder is Iowa Civil Contracting, which is Iowa Road Control on our listing.
Okay.
I was pretty sure of that. Bid bond is attached and signed. Iowa Road Control is out of Victor, Iowa. Total is $531,708.66. 531708.66. Okay, yeah, that verifies it was Iowa Road Control.
It's good.
Articles of amendment. Next bidder is Midwest Contracting out of Marshall, Minnesota. Bid bond attached and signed. Total cost $383,988.30. 383,988.30. Final bidder, Peterson Contractors out of Rhinebeck, Iowa. Last one on your list. Bid bond attached and signed. Total bid for Peterson is $345,706.95. 345706.95. Same thing, we'll tabulate these and bring it back to the board next week for approval.
Outstanding. One additional thing I'd like you to put on while we look at these next week, Darren, can we start to formally have, and I'm not suggesting it is a decision, but start to formally have the discussion of what happened with 190th Street, specifically the longer bridge right there, long term. Philosophy being, we're going to have to close it down while we put in this culvert, and I think we want to have a conversation, do we ever open it back up?
About that on next week?
I want the beginning of the conversation next week. I mean, we've talked about it informally multiple times. I want an agenda item that says discussion where we can start talking about it, because this is going to happen this construction season. So if we're going to make a decision to do that, we need to go ahead and make it sooner rather than later. Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
guys. Thanks, everybody, for being here. All right, now back to the top of the agenda. Agency Reports, Center for Creative Justice Annual Report, Craig Evans. Craig, thank you for indulging us getting it done so we can get those guys out of here.
No problem.
So Craig and I spoke to a group at Iowa State, a group of graduate students, what, 4 or 5 months ago?
Oh, not long.
And I said your arm is healing.
Healing, yes.
Well, I was kind of... Theirs grow slow.
That's right.
Well, I'm Craig Evans. I'm the Executive Director of the Center for Creative Justice. We're a local community-based private nonprofit agency providing correctional supervision to criminal offenders, adult criminal offenders placed on probation by the local judiciary. We've been in existence since 1974, more than 40 years. To the best of my knowledge, we're the oldest privatized probation agency in the country and the largest nonprofit providing these types of services in Iowa. We're mainly designed traditionally first-time and non-felony offenders. Department of Correctional Services grants and supervises all the parolees and a lot of the felony cases. Almost all of our clients are placed on probation by the local court system here in Story County. We do get a few from other counties, but it's pretty much Story County exclusively. Of course, continue to rely on us as an important sentencing option here in Story County. We do supervise about three-quarters of the community members that are placed on probation in Story County. Their total caseload is about 614 clients. Some of those are on warrant status, but that's our total number. We believe our services are important here in the county. We provide rehabilitation to criminal offenders that have violated some sort of criminal code. We also try to provide protection to community members by providing supervision to these adult criminal offenders. We're proud of our success. In 2016, 90% of the clients that were placed on probation to our agency successfully completed their probation. Our recidivism study, so this would have been people that were placed on probation in 2014, did not reoffend for the following year in 2015. We do that annually. That was 93% that did not reoffend, so we're very pleased with that number as well.
Has that number been pretty consistent through the years, or do you see that bounce around some?
Well, actually, this is the best. The last few years has been 93%, which is the highest non-recidivism rate we've ever achieved. Hopefully, we can stay at that level. Traditionally, it's been more in the low to mid-80s. But we're very pleased with the number recently and hope we can continue to maintain that at that high rate.
And so that's once they complete probation for the next year, calendar year we're looking at.
Correct.
And how many, so you got 614 in your system right now. How many of those are coming in each year? What do we see here in and out kind of each year, assuming your caseload stays pretty consistent?
Well, I wish I'd brought that exactly, but I would say probably half. Most people are put on probation for a year period of time, some longer. Not sure, but sometimes they complete early. If they get everything done, we will release them before that 1 year is up if they've completed all the conditions of their probation.
So I do the math real quick, and I say out of the 300, we're roughly seeing 21 who will reoffend in some way.
Yeah.
Once they.
And so we're hopefully we can continue at that pace. We're also looking at perhaps extending that 18 months to 2 years is sometimes a better way to look at recidivism. But for now, we've been doing it on a yearly basis because it requires basically a bunch of manual work to go into the Iowa Courts Online and pull those statistics out. The clients we work with work toward a lot of goals: obtain substance abuse assessment, substance abuse treatment if necessary. Same with mental health assessment, mental health treatment if that problem's identified. Those that are on for OWI, which makes up a large percentage of our caseload, also complete drinking driver school. We have a reasonable number of clients that have been convicted of a domestic assault, and so they go through the Iowa Domestic Abuse Program. A lot of them are also that are on for assaulted cases not related to domestic violence, go through anger management programming. We also supervise the payment of victim restitution and court costs. We think it makes financial sense to use probation as an option. Incarceration of offenders, whether it be in the county jail or in state penal institutions, is expensive. Most of the clients we work with are able to continue their probation successfully, do what they need to do, and return to the community. While they're in the community, they can work, do a number of things they can't do if they're locked up in jail or in one of the state penal institutions. I think we provide a cost-effective and results-oriented community option for working with adult criminal offenders. Reducing criminal conduct obviously has a widespread impact on the entire community. Fewer tax dollars are spending investigating and prosecuting offenders. Victimization is reduced. We think the programming we provide has a positive ripple effect in the community that goes far beyond the individuals we provide services to. Clients who receive treatment stay sober, learn to manage their anger appropriately, obtain and maintain employment, take responsibility for their actions, manage their finances, pay back their victims, impact the entire community in a positive way. They become better partners, better community members. We just feel like the impact goes way beyond just the offenders we work with.
Okay. Yeah.
Questions? I'm more than happy to try to answer questions.
Very good narrative here.
I mean, the part I would underscore, Marty, is we do it, as in a lot of things, we do it a little differently here in Story County, and it seems to be a pretty good way for Story County to operate. I think the results speak for themselves. And we're really, really appreciative of the time. But I did have one question.
Yes,
how many employees do you have working on that caseload of 614? Understanding that some of the 614 is on subpoena, but what's an average caseload that you're dealing with?
We just actually, so one of our part-time staff members is recently retired, and they have had is retiring. They've had a slight uptick in case numbers. So as of March 1st, we will have 3 full-time probation officers, and I carry a caseload of about supposedly 3/5 of a caseload myself as the director. So we'll have 3 3/5, I guess.
Right, but so you're dealing with a caseload of everybody's got 100, 150
people. Yeah, 130, I think, would be the
average. Is that a reasonable number? I mean, that seems really, really high.
It is, but we use an actuarial risk assessment to try to ascertain which individuals maybe need more supervision than others, and try to, the ones that don't require as much supervision maybe not see quite as frequently as some of the others that maybe require more, depending on how they're doing. I think it's manageable at the present time.
Okay.
I mean, we always, certainly would like more staff if we could afford it.
That's always the key.
Yeah, probably the only ones, are we?
You're the only one asking.
Really?
Put
us at the top of the list, if you wouldn't mind.
Anything else for Greg? Austin, I don't know when the last time the Trib did something on CCJ. I'm telling you, it's worth digging into. It's a special program. So, Greg, thank you very much.
Have a great time.
Sonia, are you here for the bid opening?
Yeah,
we just did it. So come here, you can have my numbers so that you know what happened. It went really, really well, Sonia. So Sonia is the clerk for Gilbert, and clearly they're highly interested in what's going on.
That was the last one right there.
You can go ahead and take that.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yep. So now we're in consideration of minutes from February 7th.
Move to approve the minutes from our Feb 17 minutes.
I second.
Any notations, corrections, additions? Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes pass. Personnel actions as listed.
I move that we accept the personnel action as listed.
Second.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda. I've got 2 requests. One, that we would pull item number 2, which is Ames Mine Rock Hauling. Did Darren leave already? You still want to pull it? You wanted him to address
it. He's
it.
In the building. I'd love to have him talk to us.
I guess I didn't have anything to say.
So we'll pull it. We'll pull it for discussion, and we'll see if he's here or not. If not, we'll at least note some of it.
All it is.
And the second one we're going to pull for discussion is consideration of contract with Rosalind Matney Harris, architect. Sorry, Darren, I had to say something before you took off. So consent agenda with those 2 amendments.
Board.
Unless there's other amendments.
I would move to accept the consent agenda with the calling of items 2 and 5 for discussion.
I second.
Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes with noted changes. Darren, now you're up again. We got the hauling contract.
I know you talked to us about this in the budgeting process. I just wanted you to flesh it out a little further as to, $500,000 is $500,000.
Yeah.
And just so I get a little bit more depth on this one and some knowledge on the takeaway, explain to me why we're choosing to do this year that way.
It's basically a timing issue. We did not do a contract rock hauling last fiscal year. We did a contract gravel hauling. We have two gravel pits. One in Marshall, one in Boone. So this prior year, we started out hauling on July 1st of this fiscal year. We were hauling gravel, which we had already paid for. So we spent months not really spending any money because we already paid for that out of the previous fiscal year. So that left us with a pretty good balance left to get spent out of this fiscal for our ROD budget. We're not able to haul that amount in the spring, so that's why we hired through Martin Marietta, and they find their own trucks to get a haul very quickly for us, as many trucks as they need. That's it in a nutshell why we do that, but like I said, we're trying to get our fleet built up with three trucks and pups and one semi, to maybe hopefully next year not have the contract haul at all, but...
That's what I said, but that's kind of where I was going, because the thing is, we found money to buy you another tandem in this year's fiscal, and I was hoping to think that this is an expense that at some point will not be an expense.
Okay. That's the goal.
Nothing. Thank you.
Yeah, I just would point out what this is, 30,000 tons of rock that we're talking about hauling. Covers how many miles of road?
About 120 miles, and then we're going to haul a lot of additional, so... That means it's a quarter of the county that we try to do.
Right, because we're roughly 750 miles of gravel roads in Story County. We try to get a quarter done every year and then deal with any problem spots. We continue to build our fleet, and with these purchases, Marty, we hope we're getting to the level that we're going to be able to haul most of our own, but we're not quite there yet.
I'd point out this spring, there is a stockpile we already have in the Boone County pit that actually has to be moved so they can produce more. So we're focusing on hauling the gravel out of that pit, which we've already paid for, so we're not be spending money this spring with our own crews either, so that just happened to work out why it was so much of a hauling contract this spring.
No, I just knew there was more of a story there, and I didn't recollect it, and I thought, well, we got you here today, and thank you for...
So for me, it just doesn't make a lot of sense that it's worth some money to take rock that we've already bought and get it on our roads, because when it's sitting in a pile, we bought it, it's not doing us any good at all.
Our trucks are still moving.
100%.
Well, it just goes to show why the rationale why you try to push ahead in purchasing the vehicles that we have to make this go away. That's two trucks right there. That expense is virtually two tandems for you. And if we can take that in-house, give you the vehicles, you get to do it yourself and save money.
Thank you. Super. Marty, you wanted it pulled. I'd ask you for the motion approving the...
I will move to accept the consent agenda item number 2.
Yes.
Yeah. I second.
Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Item, the Ames Mine rock hauling is approved. That's item number 5. Laura, if you ask for this one, consideration of the contract with Rosalind Mackey Harris Architects.
I do. And the reason I asked for it to be pulled has nothing to do with the contract with Rosalind. It's because we have it listed as proprietary information, and I would like to refer over to the county attorney to maybe look into how we are handling these boilerplate kind of contracts to determine how we can actually make sure that a citizen can see this without having to come in and look at it at the auditor's office. So with that, I'll move that we accept the contract.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, sir, you're good with the request of your office. And it's my understanding that Ethan already reviewed these and was okay with them as proprietary.
I'd be happy to do that. Yeah, I understand the concern about balancing the copyright issue with the public's right to know. So I'll look into that, and I'm happy to issue an opinion.
I appreciate it. And proprietary to me, just so you understand my reference a little bit, when I hear proprietary and how I understand the news, but maybe I'm wrong, is that it's actual information that goes beyond a just kind of a copyright on a printed document. We're talking about actual formulas, or we're talking about information that is central to the conducting of a business. And we are letting people see these, so I'm not sure it fits proprietary. And so then it becomes a copyright issue, and I think that, yeah, where I come down on is it's a boilerplate.
Super. So I've got a motion to approve referring the issue to the county attorney's office for further clarification.
Correct.
And a second.
Any further discussion? Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes.
I would make a motion to approve the consent agenda with the remaining items on it.
We already did that. So we're good. Outstanding.
That brings us to...
That gets us all the way down now to public hearing items, I believe. Public hearing items, first consideration of Ordinance 253 amending various chapters in the Story County Land Development.
Did we pass the actual contract? I don't think we did. I made the motion, but I think then we got back to the... I was premature in that motion, so we never followed up. Do you have it, Shelley, that we voted?
I don't know.
Yeah, so I thought you made the motion that we would approve this
yes.
and refer to the county attorney's office, and Marty seconded that, and we voted on it.
So
this
okay.
has been adopted.
It's hard to understand. I'm sorry.
Stop when we don't move the other way. Now, we're to first consideration of 253. Jerry?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jerry. Ordinance 253, it deals with agritourism farm. Currently, the terminology is farm, retail, or novelty. So that's one of the changes that's going to take place. But with these amendments, they're really doing two things. The first thing is to clarify the existing definition where everything starts. Really focus on what the intent is and the roots of that, the purpose of that definition. There was a view from staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission that some of the uses that had been permitted had kind of grown and expanded beyond what the original intent was of that use. The second part of this is to really to help applicants to provide a really strong application and to get them to think about the purpose and intent, which is the primary use for these agricultural areas should be agricultural production, crop production, and or livestock production. And then the secondary thing is what they're bringing to it, which involves the conditional use permit process. And to focus also on what the impact is of this use to not only their property, but the surrounding land uses in the rural area. So this is a work program item. We're always happy to bring work program items to you. It was carried forward two times, once in 2015, once in 2016. We're happy to be working on it now. The farm retail and novelty, which is now agritourism farm, goes through a conditional use permit process, which involves board of adjustment action from the from that. There's a recommendation from the Planning and Zoning Commission. Currently, to determine if a use meets the criteria, we first look at the definition of farm retail or novelty, and then we apply the standards of approval, which again are in the Story County Land Development Regulations. So everything starts really with this farm retail or novelty definition. I'm going to read it. It says it means a farm that, in addition to crop and or livestock production, offers services or products, whether seasonal or not, for sale to the public on site, which are uniquely tied to the heritage or current practice of agriculture in Iowa, including but not limited to, and these are the types of things that we have received applications for, tours, demonstrations, petting zoos, and the like, retail sales of fruits, vegetables, pumpkins, melons, berries, trees, and other ag-related crops. And it goes on to say that it does not apply in situations where an agricultural use is exempt under state law. In addition to the broad definition, we apply, as I said, the conditional use permit process, standards of approval. We look at compatibility, you know, of the use on that site, you know, what's the impact to the adjacent land, transitions, are there existing natural buffers that might help in buffering the proposed use to the adjacent properties, what's the traffic going to be like, what's the existing traffic counts, what's the traffic projection with what's being proposed. We look at parking and loading, signage and lighting. Is this something that's going to require or involve activities in the evening? And what's the impact on lighting? Where is it going to be located? And then it looks at environmental protection issues, not only with on-site septic systems, or maybe this is a case where portable facilities might be able to be brought in. What's the impact on stormwater drainage, erosion control, and other natural resources? So the ordinance says if those things can be met, then it should be approved unless the Board of Adjustment concludes that it would have a negative impact on health, safety, and welfare. There would be an impact on light and air. There's a negative impact on roads, or it would cause hazards with regard to fire or other related dangers. It may have a negative impact on property value, and that it should be within the intent, purpose, and spirit of the ordinance and the current county land use plan. So these uses are permitted in the A1 Agricultural District, A2 Agribusiness District, and the Greenbelt Conservation District. We're not proposing to change those three areas where conditional uses can be submitted. This item went through the Planning and Zoning Commission several times. After the December 7th meeting, they provided input to staff to provide more clarity on the definition. The definition was tweaked multiple times. And then also to provide more guidance on what an applicant needs to do to make a submittal. As I said, the vision or the goal was not to provide additional regulations, but really to provide more guidelines. So, again, the first thing that got changed was farm retail and novelty is now agritourism. Again, there was a concern with the use of retail and novelty that things might get detracted from what really the intent is or the purpose of this use. So words like enhance, educational, entertainment were added. Additional language was added after the January 4 meeting. Planning staff at the February 1st meeting suggested, and this was something that was initially suggested by staff, but if a item couldn't go through the standards of approval for a home business permit, the language was set up such that they could submit a conditional use permit for that. And that's not really what we want for our rural areas, our residential areas. Those are typically our more limited use areas. We should be providing protection to those areas. So that initial statement was struck from the ordinance. However, if there is a rural or agricultural related activity that can fit the home business permit process, then those will be reviewed that way. So we're looking at really four chapters that are being amended. The first one is the general provisions and definitions, chapter 85, again, providing clarity to that definition. Chapter 88 is in the general site plan standards. We have a provision in there for a maximum parking standard for agritourism uses where we didn't have before. We provide some additional language in Chapter 89 for home businesses. Again, if there's an ag-related use that can meet the home business permit application process, those will be reviewed that way. Otherwise, they'll go on to the conditional use permit process. The standard for approval for traffic generation for a home business, the language was pretty general and broad. We tried to put some specific terminology and have like a maximum number of trips based on the number of people that reside on the property. And then the last one is the conditional use chapter 90. Again, we provided the guidelines and made an adjustment to the actual table, which is 90.1, indicating that we have supplemental standards now for the A1, A2, and the Greenbelt Conservation Districts. So Resolution 1751, setting a hearing for Ordinance 253, was passed January 10 by the Board of Supervisors. The publication for this ordinance was published February 9. And at the February 1st Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, they did recommend approval of this ordinance in the version that is before you. I won't go through all this in detail, but this is the Chapter 85. This is the tweaks that were made to the definition. This is the actual table under the general standards for parking. We now have a maximum limit amount. And really, it's up to the applicants to determine what their minimum threshold parking needs are. This is Chapter 89, home business section, again, agricultural uses, if they can meet the standards for the submittal for a home business permit, they'll be reviewed that way. Otherwise, they'll be required to submit the conditional use permit if they can't meet these requirements. And then these are the guidelines. Again, the focus really is, principal permitted use is farming, agricultural row crop and or livestock production. That should be the primary principle used. That's the focus. And then there should be a related, the activities that you bring should relate to the primary principle permitted use. And then we've got things like pest control, plan when it's needed, focused on the sanitary facilities. Maybe some improvements might be needed. Again, maybe bringing in portable facilities, focused on overflow parking. You know, depending on what events are planned, they may need additional space. So there's language on that.
Gary, I have a question about the parking. We've set a maximum on parking spaces and then a maximum on overflow parking off of road. I understand no parking on right of way, but why would we set a maximum if this is a rural event?
Well, our standards are set up such that all our standards are maximum, and I think we leave it up to the applicant to determine what their minimum
threshold is. Is it just because we do it for everybody else?
That's what the current ordinance is set up to do, to provide a maximum.
Was there any feedback from any of our rural vendors, the wineries, or Center Grove or Strawberry Patch or whatever, when they have really big crowds for a few days at certain seasons, where I suspect that they're exceeding them, or a big wedding out at one of the wineries would exceed this?
Yeah, at one of the planning zoning commission meetings, there was a representative from one of the uses by Cambridge, and that person didn't speak any concerns on the parking. And some of that, I think, has been handled through the conditional use permit process. And in fact, the last revision that individual had, they expanded their parking to come north of where their activity area was. So it was handled through that CUP process.
And this would not eliminate the ability to go through the CUP. This is talking more in general terms. If you qualify, you qualify. If you don't qualify for this, you can still go through the CUP if you've got something outside of it.
Okay.
Right. And there's a maximum on the overflow of like 20% of like the max.
Right, but I think the maximums are important because that addresses our primary concern as we sit here today, at least as I see it, is what is the impact going to be if you have 5 events a year that do this? If you have those, then we need to have a mechanism for dealing with them, but it doesn't need to automatically deal with it. And that's why I see the maximum power.
Okay.
Gary, do you see it differently than that?
I do not.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
And then, like I said, emergency planning. Some of these uses, you know, they bring a lot of people to their property, and there was one example where they didn't really have anything in place, and this will give them that purpose and focus to think about whether it's natural or a man-made emergency, how they're going to handle it. Liability insurance is another thing that was added. And then the table is amended to indicate that we have these additional standards. And again, we're not changing or suggesting that the districts be changed. So again, they would be permitted in an A1, A2, and a Greenbelt Conservation District.
But Jerry, help me with this. So it felt to me like the impetus behind really having this conversation is we had a few instances where we were at least approaching, maybe crossing the line of things that were outside really an agro farm business kind of thing and bordering more on an event center kind of thing, which is, it's fine, but that's not what this is supposed to do. Was that the impetus that started all this?
That's exactly it. Again, the focus for this is farming, agriculture, row crop production, livestock production. That should be the primary activity on the property. And then it's, the activity should have a relationship to those two primary things. which, I mean, the common things are the corn mazes, they're growing pumpkins, you know, they're doing things like that, or they've got something special that they want the outside world to see. But again, the focus is the row crop, the livestock production. That should be the primary focus, and it shouldn't detract from that. So that's really what we were working on, trying to refocus with the changes.
Yeah, which if you, I mean, if you want to primarily be an event center, an event space that's going to have it, that's great. This just isn't the mechanism that you would use to get there. Okay.
So that brings us to the recommendation. February 1, Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval, 6-0, for the board to approve Ordinance 253 today, and then they would set up the second consideration February 21st. I would just like to add a big thank you to Amelia. She did. She was a project architect, project manager on this. She did a lot of work on it and you know, helped work with the P&Z with her insight. I think we have a pretty strong
outstanding. Thank you. Questions or Jared before we open the public hearing?
None.
All right, we'll open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone who would like to address Ordinance 253. Seeing no one move the microphone, we'll close the public hearing. I'll turn to the board for potential action.
I would move that we approve Ordinance number 253 related to agritourism farm as amended in reference to this word.
On first reading.
On first reading.
And you'll set the second reading for?
Next week. I will set the second reading for February 21st. I'm getting there, Sean.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get there. And now it's your turn.
Second.
Discussion. Here. Good. Jerry, anything to add before we vote?
That's it.
Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. 253 passes on first consideration. Second consideration will be next week.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Good job. Next item is first consideration of Ordinance 258, amending certain boundaries of the official zoning map of Story County, Iowa. This is the Jensen rezoning request.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you? All right, this is a request by Donald Jensen. He lives 25114 580th Avenue. His request is a rezoning of his property located at 57375 Lincoln Highway. The request is really to change the existing zoning for this portion of this property, 4.59 acres of approximately 29 acre parcel. The request is to essentially change the rezone the property from A2 with conditions, as it's currently now, to the A2 agribusiness district without conditions. Okay, so here we are. Here's the city of Nevada here, city of Ames here. It's about a third of a mile east of the city of Ames along Lincoln Highway. Okay, so again, that's a 4.59 acre portion of this parcel. The current zoning has conditions, which I'll look at here in a minute, and he's looking to remove those conditions. Zoning and surrounding land use, it's primarily row crop, primarily A1 district. There's a commercial light industrial use here, which is the country landscapes property. The microphones are beeping. Is that?
But yeah, mine is.
Yeah.
We're all beeping.
Shelly's good with it.
Okay. Surrounding land use, over 80% agricultural, a little bit of commercial, industrial, and about 1% residential. Sure. So just a little bit of background. This area is located within the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. This is an area that the city of Ames is looking to annex, a total area of about 1,350 acres. In 2016, the designation of this area was changed to planned industrial. The City Development Board did address this item at their February meeting, but we'll kind of table it until the next meeting, and we'll address it again on March 8th. So the annexation timeline has been pushed back a little bit, but is anticipated to be complete by the end of April of 2017, this year. Upon annexation of this area, the entire area will be zoned A or agricultural with the goal of transitioning to the industrial use. Okay, so in 2006, the applicant requested a rezoning for these same 4.59 acres that we're looking at today from the A1 agricultural district to the A2 agribusiness district in order to accommodate a seed research and sod sales business. The rezoning was approved with the following conditions. The health department shall be allowed to review and inspect the existing septic system. Future buildings and uses shall comply with the Lincoln Highway Corridor plan once approved. Based on our research, this plan actually wasn't approved due to a lot of changes before it was actually brought forward for adoption. So we consider that condition kind of null now. And the third condition is the one we're really looking at, which is the existing buildings shall be limited to seed research and sod sales. So that's really our focus here. In 2016, moving back up to the first one here, in 2016, Environmental Health determined that the system, the septic system, was sufficient for the current use. So the existing structures on the property, there's a steel utility building, which is 60 by 99, which was built in 2005. There's a small 20 by 32 office building built in 1999, and then two smaller storage sheds that were built in the 1990s. So here's a site plan. The machine shed is here on the western edge of the property. The office building is kind of to the north there, and then the two storage sheds are on the east. Currently, the utility or building or the machine shed is being used for machine storage. The office building is being used as a business office for landscaping and trucking operations, and then the storage sheds are just that storing equipment for turf and different seeds and erosion control supplies. So the proposed use of the property, the applicant would like to accommodate a tenant in the large machine shed unrelated to seed research and sod sales. He would also like to add additions to the existing office building both on both sides, the east and the west sides, and to convert the structure into his personal dwelling. Thirdly, the applicant is, and this is a little bit of a side note, but is also considering constructing a new accessory structure to be used as a shop and as storage for his trucks and trailer, which are currently located in the machine shed. Here's some site photos of the subject property. This is standing by Lincoln Way looking north. Here's looking west down Lincoln Way toward the city of Ames. There's a country landscape property here. Here's the closer view of the machine shed, once again 60 by 99. This is the building the applicant is proposing to lease out. Looking north, this is the office building and the proposed dwelling. Closer look there. Here's looking north from the subject property. As you can see, agricultural row crops surrounding it. Here's looking east at the proposed rezoning area and the accessory structures. And this is looking east on Lincoln Way toward the city of Nevada. And south, to the south, there's also agricultural row crops. So in terms of the standards of approval, the proposed rezoning shall conform to the Story County Development Plan. We took this and looked at the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. It is to be annexed, and now
in March. It's going to go to City Development Board, but ultimately the new timeline is the end of April 2017. All the uses in place at the time of the annexation could continue as legal nonconforming uses if they meet our requirements today. However, they would not likely be permitted in the City of Ames Agricultural District. So if those uses are in place at the time of annexation, they would be continue to be permitted as legal nonconforming uses. The A2 use must be in place, or if a use is in place post-annexation, the use would have to meet the requirements of the city's agriculture district. Uses permitted in the A2 business district, we feel would provide a reasonable transition for this property while the area does transition from, as we looked at, primarily agricultural to the industrial area. So, number two, the proposed rezoning shall conform to the statement of intent for the proposed district requirements. Uses permitted in the A2 district are strongly related to agriculture. Additional indwelling is permitted within the A2 district. The proposed rezoning shall be compatible with the surrounding land uses and development patterns. As an A2 zone property should be, it is completely surrounded by the A1 district. A2 uses of the A2 district are compatible and interrelated to agriculture, and the A2 district would act as a transitional use while the area transitions. The four standards not applicable, that has to do with the natural resource area. There's no area on this property that's designated as natural resource. We did receive some comments about the septic system from environmental health. And also a comment about septic upgrades or major septic repairs. The house or the building must be hooked to the municipal sewer upon an upgrade or a major repair if the building isn't within 200 feet of the sanitary sewer main, which the city will be extending no longer. We just asked, Planning and Development Department asked a few questions about use. And then proposed use. We sent notice letters twice, once before the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting and again before this meeting today. We didn't receive any comments. A representative from the City of Ames did attend the conceptual review meeting for this proposed rezoning and indicated that the proposed A2 use must be in place before the annexation. If it's not, it will have to meet the city's zoning requirements. If the dwelling is not completed by the annexation date, the applicant would need to contact and work with the city building inspection office. And then once annexed, any additional proposed structures must meet the zoning requirements of the city. So some analysis. There's no change in the base zoning district. We're simply removing those conditions again. The total rezoning area is really 15% of the property. The remaining land will remain in row crop production. The applicant already conducts some A2 agribusiness uses on the property, and because this area will take time to transition into the industrial, we feel like this is a reasonable use for the meantime. The applicant has been informed by the City of Ames on the expectations there. And then additionally, there are no new accesses planned for this property. The applicant may improve the existing access by widening it for truck access, but there's no additional access points being proposed. So the recommendation here, Planning and Development staff recommends approval of the zoning map amendment from the A2 agribusiness district with conditions to the A2 agribusiness district without conditions, as put forth in case rezoning 0117, which is alternative one. On February 1st, the Planning and Zoning Commission also recommended approval of this item. So,
Any questions?
No. Questions before we open public hearing?
Appreciate what your office has done. This is, you know, people think this is pretty much a cut and paste operation. This is anything but. And this is a.
Well, and what time of the essence?
Yeah, I mean, it's a transitional part of the county. The property owner wanted to get some things started. Jerry and staff did a great job. It was not made easy. I mean, I think that's the last thing over a lot, but thank you for what you've done to get to this day.
Okay, we'll open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone who would like to address Ordinance 258. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, I'll turn to the board. Thanks a lot.
I'll move approval of the first consideration of Ordinance 258, vetting the certain boundaries of the official zoning map of Story County. The Jensen rezoning request has submitted and set second consideration for Tuesday, February 21, 2017.
I second.
Got a motion to second. I would encourage you both to think about when we get to next week's reading, unless we get some comments that we would wait for the final reading. There's some things that need to happen prior to annexation occurring, assuming that annexation is in fact going to occur. And I believe we need to give our property owners who seem to be making a really reasonable request about their own property the ability to do what they can do. Okay? Further discussion.
And I think that is good advice, and I hope you take it.
Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes on first consideration. Next week is second consideration. Next is first consideration. Thanks. Here you go. First consideration of Ordinance 259, amending certain boundaries of the official zoning map for the J&S subdivision.
So this is a request for a rezoning as well as a minor subdivision. The applicant is Jeff Dillman of 3410 Valley View Road in Ames. The property is requested for the rezoning and the subdivision is in Section 19 of Nevada Township, directly south of the city of Nevada. The property address is 25996 620th Avenue. There are really three components to this request. There's a zoning map amendment from the A2 Agricultural District to the the A1 Agricultural District to the A2 Agribusiness District. The second item is a C2C future land use map amendment from the agricultural conservation area to the commercial industrial area. And the third item is the minor subdivision request to divide the 1.7 net acre building site from the existing agricultural land. So here we are about a mile and a quarter south of the city of Nevada, right at the intersection of 260th Street and 620th Avenue. Land use is within a half mile. We're 95% agricultural in this area, 3.42% residential, and just over 1% commercial industrial. I did receive a question at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting about what the other commercial industrial use is. And within a half mile, that's the Indian Creek Country Club, which is a commercial use there. There are four single-family dwellings within a quarter mile of this property. Here's a closer look at the proposed subdivision and rezoning area. The proposed area to be subdivided and rezoned is this 1.98 gross acre area of the 28.23 net acre existing parcel. The current zoning is A1 agricultural, and the proposed zoning is A2 agribusiness. Here's the plat. Once again, the rezoning area would just be this approximately two-acre area in the southwest corner, consistent with the subdivision. So the background on this property, the existing parcel was created in 1999 when parcel E, which is up here in the northwest corner, was split from the original quarter-quarter. And that was done with the plat of survey, which brings us today to the minor subdivision. Currently, a majority of the subject property is being farmed and is in row crops. There is a
4,500 square foot steel utility building, which was built in 2011, located in that southwest corner of the property. This building is currently being used by the owner for maintenance, repair, and storage of the agricultural equipment. The proposed use is for a seed sales representative and distribution. A recent resignation of a Pioneer seed sales representative opened up an opportunity for Jason Fullen to become the Pioneer representative. And this kind of sales area includes six townships in the Nevada area, Richland, Nevada, New Albany, Sherbin, Grant, and Milford. So the proposed use is a seed distribution site. We have some questions about the anticipated traffic of the site. Between December and May, the slower part of the year, the applicant indicated that he would expect between 1 and 2 semi-truck load seed deliveries per week. Between March and May, perhaps 5 to 7 customers per day for seed pickup. And then throughout the year, 1 to 2 customers per day for seed purchase meetings. The employee plans for this property would be one full-time employee, which is the owner himself, and possibly an additional part-time employee for the busier months of seed distribution. All parking and loading activities will take place on site. There are some proposed site improvements to this property. This is a representation of the existing building here. The applicant is proposing a 50-by-60 addition to the north for additional storage. He's also proposing 3 4,000 bushel bulk soybean storage tanks on the east side of the building. And then a 30-by-40 addition on the southeast side of the building for office space. Here's a subject property of the existing building coming off of 620th. Here's looking north at the subject property. Parcel E is up to the north there. Looking north along S14 or 620th Avenue. Here's looking directly west from the subject property down 260th Street. Looking south along 620th Avenue. This is looking south from the subject property at the agricultural row crops to the south there. And looking directly east from the subject property. Again, this is all surrounded by row crops.
Looks like it was a really nice day while you were out there.
That was beautiful. this is the rear east side of the building looking north. Again, this is where the proposed office area would be.
And the proposed addition would be just north of that.
Right, yep, right there. North here. In terms of accessing the property, there are no other access points proposed. The lot 2, which is the agricultural row crops, will be accessed through a 50-foot easement, which will be on the west side of the property here along 620th. So standards of approval. The rezoning shall conform to the Story County Development Plan, or the C2C plan. We feel that this, based on some principles from the C2C plan, that this does align with the future development plan. The proposal uses an existing building, and no row crops will be taken out of production. The access is off of 620th, which is a paved road, and an existing access point. So the proposed rezoning shall conform to the statement of intent. The proposed use of the subject property aligns with the proposed rezoning. The lease score for this property was 260 and is lower than the 267 to 300 point threshold, as indicated in the statement of intent for the A2 district. And seed sales is strongly interrelated to agricultural use, and as best any field is best located in an agricultural setting. The proposed rezoning shall be compatible with surrounding land uses. This property is entirely surrounded by the A1 agricultural district. Again, over 90% of the land is used for 95% of the land within a half mile, is used for agricultural purposes. And it's designated agricultural conservation area on the C2C future land use map. That fourth standard is, once again, about the natural resources, is not applicable to this site. This is the kind of a summary of the proposed C2C amendment. This is a summary of the commercial industrial area designation. It supports long-term planning objective of accommodating future demand for types of commercial and industrial growth that may be best located in a rural setting outside of an urbanized area. So in terms of the subdivision, minor subdivision plats can create no more than four lots. In this case, we have two. A development lot, all development lots should be fronted on an existing public street, which is the case here. The subdivision includes no land set apart for new streets, alleys, school property, etc., and no agricultural or minor subdivisions have been approved for the tracts after December 31st of 2003. So here's some comments from the interagency review team. Just a reminder from the Environmental Health Department that a time of transfer septic inspection will be required for this property. The assessor's office commented that the classification will change from agricultural to commercial, and that the auditor's office just commented that a minor subdivision would be necessary because of the previous split. Story County Planning and Development Department asked several questions about use and proposed use, and talked a little bit about the process. Notice letters were sent to property owners within a quarter mile, again, twice, once before the February 1st Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, and then again before this meeting today. We did not receive any comments. So just looking at the proposed rezoning and future land use map changes. The proposed seed sales is interrelated to agriculture and is surrounded by agricultural row crops. Being surrounded by the A1 district is required in our land development regulations. No crops will be taken out of production. The proposed rezoning conforms to the C2C plan. The proposed use conforms with the statement of intent and the regulations of the A2 agribusiness district. And the proposed use will conform to the surrounding land use and development patterns based on our future land use map. Some analysis then on the minor subdivision. The proposed division accomplishes really just the primary goal of separating the building site from the agricultural land. The proposed subdivision creates two lots. Both lots have frontage on 620th, although the access would be an easement for lot two there. And there's no land set apart for other uses like streets, alleys, parks, dedicated open space. So the recommendation, staff is recommending approval of the proposed zoning map amendment and the C2C future land use map amendment from agricultural conservation to the commercial industrial area as put forth in case rezoning 0217, as well as approval of the proposed JNS minor subdivision as put forth in subdivision 0217. On February 1st, the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval of this item. On February 7th, the City of Nevada Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval of this case. And this item will be brought to the City Council, the City of Nevada City Council, on Monday, February 27th for review.
Very good question, currently, before we open the public hearing. We'll open the public hearing. Ask if there's anyone who would like to address Ordinance 259, Resolution 1775, and Resolution 1776, all part of this. And seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll close the public hearing, and I'll turn to the board for questions or action.
I would move approval of the first consideration of Ordinance 259, amending certain boundaries of the official zoning maps, Story County, Iowa, for Resolution 1775, the proposed JNS subdivision, Resolution 1776, CGC Fusion Land Use Map Amendment, as submitted, and the second consideration for Tuesday, FAP 2, and we might well want to move to the adoption of the third and waiting for the third.
And we can talk about that so February 21st, February 21st is what I heard for second reading.
Yes.
So we've got a motion.
I second.
Discussion.
No, it makes sense. I'm glad to see that it worked out so smoothly. It's a good location, and I'm glad to see what might not have been located in Beta is.
Aye. Holt.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 259, 1775, and 1776 all pass first reading, second reading set for next week. Emily, good job. Thank you very much. We've handled the first two additional items. The next additional item is discussion and consideration of Iowa Retirement Investors Club. Alyssa and Jennifer Sandusky are with us today.
Good morning.
All right, so Story County has been all over the place over the last 20 years in this, and we still find ourselves cleaning up some of where we've been. So as I understand, Alyssa, this is another step in that effort to clean things up and consolidate for our employees. Jennifer, how are you today?
I'm well, and yourself?
Good. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So we'll wait for Alyssa to get back over there. I don't know how closely you followed this through the years, but at one point we had somewhere above 20 different retirement options for our employees.
I did not follow that.
Oh. Back in the mid-2000s, we would receive checks for somebody who had been a county employee at some time in the past. And so we had a lady named Sherry Howard who then worked for the county. And through some of the falling out that happened over an entity called CTEC, Sherry Howard left. And as she left, we ended up with piles of information in the supervisor's office. And actually, Mark, it's funny that Mark had walked in here because Mark has spent several years trying to clean all this up. We would honestly, with Alyssa, we would find checks still in envelopes to people in some of these piles. And so we have spent the last 10 years or so trying to unwind this thing. And the reality is we still have, the way we handle it now is much cleaner, but we still have kind of this nest of items that are out there from the way that Story County operated in the past. Okay, so Alyssa, I was killing time while you were finishing off. Fill in the blanks that I left.
So we had 28 companies prior to 2008, and we still have some funds in some other companies. When we transitioned over, the board approved up to four companies, updated our plan document in 2008. It has been updated since then a couple times. So we still have some former employees that have funds in some of our plans have not been terminated. They no longer can contribute, any of our current employees contribute to these old plans, but there are some that are still out there.
There's no way to turn those over to the employees.
We tried if they will take them and roll them over. We've done quite a bit in the last few years. We're down, I would imagine, under a dozen. We be tracked with the statements. We transfer the information on to the employee. Some want, you know, some have wanted to take it out. Some, they're happy leaving it there, but for now. So that's where we're at. We currently have three companies that we our employees can invest with. We have a little over 10% participation. We have 28 employees that do contribute to a deferred comp. And so part of this whole thing is not only to look at what we have and need to, you know, clean up and do that. We also need to look at enhancing the benefit for our employees, get more, you know, get the information out there, get better options for them. You know, the board has done a really good job over the past 3 to 5 years of enhancing different benefits, whether it's life insurance, disability, health insurance, dental, different things like that. This is kind of that last piece of our employee benefit package that we need to take a look at.
Thank you, Alyssa. So, Jennifer, tell us why you're here and what your position with the state of Iowa is.
Right. Good morning again. I'm here because Alyssa asked me to come and talk to you about potentially joining our plan. I'm the plan administrator for the State of Iowa's Retirement Investors Club, so I'm a state employee. And I've got a brief presentation, unless you have other questions you'd like to ask first.
I think let's start with the presentation. If it's okay with you, as we have questions, we'll ask them.
Absolutely. And you've got a couple of paper documents in front of you. I'll just mention briefly so you know what they are, and then we'll get the PowerPoint presentation. The first, and I do have copies here if anybody in the audience would like them, is just a brief table of the plan services that we offer. The left column is services that a 457B plan sponsor must provide. These are responsibilities that the county takes on currently. If you stay with your own plan, you certainly are welcome to do that, you are responsible for all of these. If you join the state's plan, you would be responsible for the top few, and then we would be taking over the remainder of those responsibilities for the people that are in our program. Some of the highlights are we would handle the plan document. We are the fiduciaries for the investment, so the county would be not being a fiduciary anymore. Currently, right now, whether you may realize it or not, you are the fiduciaries for the program, so you are responsible for the investments. You're not responsible for returns, obviously, but you're responsible for having a process in place that allows you to select the investments and review them. At the state, we do this through a competitive bid process, and I'll have a few slides to talk about that. And we also annually review the investments with an outside investment consultant, because we at the state are not investment experts ourselves. We just have a very small staff of administrative folks. We also will handle some of the personal things in a defined contribution plan, such as if somebody gets divorced and they need to separate their assets. We take care of that so Liz and her staff would not have to be, you know, personally involved with coworkers in dealing with their divorces. Somebody might need an unforeseeable emergency distribution, and they might not want to talk to their coworker about what's happened in their life that's caused a financial hardship. So having an independent outside party might be of assistance. So your staff would feel more comfortable in talking to someone like me who they don't see in a lunchroom or in the restroom than to Liz and her staff. The second item is just our RFP at a glance. And this is just our main education piece that we give to all new hires. And for any employer that's in our plan, we ask that they do so as well. The front side is just basic information about our plan. And the back side shows the providers that we offer and their investments that they have in their products. And then, of course, we just have the slides, copies of the slides. So I'm going to see if I can use this. Oh, that works. Lovely. So, in RIC, we offer 457 and 401A plans, and those are the two I'm going to talk to you about today. We also offer a 403B plan for our education employees. Most school districts are in that plan, including Nevada. AEA and community colleges are in that plan. It's all the same plan as far as providers and investments, so it makes it really helpful to families if you have somebody who works, say, for the city and for the county, and for the school district as well, husband and wife perhaps, they can have the same investment advisor in the same investments. We are offered through the Iowa Department of Administrative Services, so we are state employees. Our customers are, of course, state employees. As I mentioned, education employees. We have all AEAs and community colleges and most school districts in our plan. And then the public sector employees. These are cities, counties, public hospitals, other similar ones.
We have over 40 public sector employers in our plan right now, of which we have 5 counties, Clay, Jones, Page, Shelby, and Wright. What we offer is a plan platform that you can then customize for your particular employees. It is competitively bid. We have to bid our plan at least every 6 years through the Accountable Government Act. In that bid process, we do use an investment consultant who helps us to structure the bid, helps us to score the bid on the investment pieces, and then we meet annually and review the investments. We also try to negotiate services for the employees to make sure that they get the best services possible. There's no additional fees for meeting with your advisors. You can meet with them once a year, you can meet with them once a month, and there's no additional fees for that. We have a lot of program communications, pretty robust website. We do the plan documentation. The 401A plan, which I didn't really talk about on the earlier slide, if an employer has employer contributions, it can go into there. If you don't, that's okay. You're not required to have employer contributions. It's a nice place that people can roll in outside assets. Say they have a 401K or an IRA, they can put it into the 401A plan and still be in the same investments that they have in the 457. So on top of the base platform, then the employer has certain responsibilities, and these are the ones that you already have right now. Basically, it's monitoring payroll contributions to make sure nobody goes over the limits and no one is staff does that right now, and then prepares the W-2s, of course. The employer would also send contributions to the provider or providers. You can select one provider or all of our providers. That's totally up to the board. You would submit them either directly to the provider, or we do offer a common remitter service. If you do select all 4 providers, you might want to use a common remitter service, but it's a once and done every month rather than going out to 4 provider websites. We do ask that employers send us term dates if anyone who's participating terminates employment. And the reason we do that is because then we forward those term dates to the providers, and then the providers can process distributions upon a participant request without coming back to the employer and asking for a signature, because they already have the term date on file. It makes it a lot easier for participants or beneficiaries in the case of a death to get access to their funds without any kind of delay based on the needing an employer response. And then we also ask that the employers provide FAN education opportunities from time to time as the employer desires. So things that the employer can customize are whether or not to have a match, the types of education they want to offer and how often they want to offer it, whether or not they want to offer a Roth. Roth did come about, I think, in 2012, I believe, for 457. Who is eligible? We don't have any eligibility criteria. That's totally up to the county. What providers you want to offer. We have 4. You can take all 4. You can take 1, 2, or 3. That's up to the county. And then, of course, whether or not you can have employer contributions. So basically, you can take our plan, our base plan, customize it to the way you want it to make it fit for your employees. We do offer a lot of information on our website for specific employers. You have your own salary reduction agreement. You have your own web page where your employees can go and find out information specific to your plan. And then the rest of the website talks about the providers, the investments, that kind of thing. So they can find all types of information on our web. We offer a variety of educational opportunities. We have an educator on our staff who gives live webcasts. She does a much better job than these, but we feel comfortable that you'll have a good person doing these. She can also do a pre-recorded webcast specific for your employees so they can come and watch it. Not come. It can be on the website, so they can watch it on demand. We can help arrange a vendor fair, however often you need to do that. We, of course, have lots of written materials. And then Robbie, our educator, can come on-site if you want to do an on-site presentation. There is an additional cost for the travel time, but other than that, everything else is at no extra cost. Here are the fees. We have a range of fees depending on the size of the employer, the complexities that we feel would be my mind is not blank. How difficult we think it would be to bring in the assets, basically.
How difficult a story, yeah.
I think it will be somewhat difficult because you have multiple providers and some of whom that you don't really have a relationship with anymore. So I'm thinking the startup fee would be closer to the $400.
Okay.
And then the annual fee is based on the number of eligibles.
And we have a chart, I didn't bring it with me, but I think you'd be right around the $100 a year annual fee. And I don't know how, what your fees are that you're paying right now to attorneys for your bond documents and things like that, but hopefully we will be, you know, competitive, if not below that.
And the fees that I'm looking at from the screen right now, these are not for employee, these are for employer.
Right. So your annual fee would be somewhere between $50 and $500. I'm thinking it's right around $100, but I'd have to see exactly how many eligibles and compare it to my chart.
And then what is, are there renewal fees on this company?
It would just be the annual fee.
100,
yeah. 100 also might be a little higher. I don't want to pull
it
up.
So between $50 and $500, mm-hmm. but you think low on the lower end of
it. Right, because it's based on the number of eligible employees.
But it is a reoccurring
yes. fee. Mm-hmm. It is the annual fee. Yep.
Thanks, John.
So, I mentioned there's a selection process. When we do a bid, we do require that each provider give us a diversified lineup. We set out the categories so they can add additional categories if they want, but they have to have at least the minimum categories. There are no restrictions or surrender penalties. There's no loads or CDSCs on any of our investments. So, everything is completely liquid. If you do select more than one provider, people can go from one provider to another without any kind of restrictions. There are flexible distribution options. You can take lifetime annuity, you can take periodic payments. You're not restricted in any way on that. Each of our providers offers investment tools and, of course, the 24/7 access. And we have an investment policy, and all the investments are reviewed annually to make sure that the investments live up to that policy. We have four providers. Each one has a fixed rate account. And that is an account that's basically owned by the insurance company. These all happen to be insurance companies, and they do a guaranteed fixed rate. And they all have variable rate funds, which are basically mutual funds. Here are our current fixed rates. In the gray bar, you'll see what there are. I know it's kind of hard to read from here. Horace Mann is currently paying 2.6. Mass Mutual is paying 3.7, Valid's at 2, and Boy is at 3. In the bid process, they were required to give us minimum rates for all 6 years of the bid, and so you see the minimum rates in the chart. That doesn't mean what they're going to pay, that's just the minimum they were able to guarantee. For instance, right now, Horace Mann's minimum is 1, but they're actually paying 2.6. And you're not going to be able to read that, but you do have it in the ad glance. These are our variable rate funds. You can see we have, you know, Vanguard funds, American funds, et cetera. So we do try to get a well-known fund family that people are comfortable investing with. On our web, as the employer and both as employees, you're able to access all kinds of information. There's the ad glance, there's our product fees. We actually have the fees listed out there on the web for each one of the underlying funds. And then we have charts that both you and the employers can look at. For instance, if you're with Horace Mann, you can click on the website and you go right to their custom website that they created for us. You can click on returns and see their actual returns. The advisors thing is an icon that you can click on and opens up a spreadsheet showing the advisors by city. So if somebody wants to find an advisor by Nevada or by Ames, they can find you on this list. They have a variety of enrollment options. 3 out of 4 allow online enrollment. 3 out of 4 have paper enrollments, whatever the people prefer. 2, if you just need help, they all have toll-free numbers. They all have a relatively new service that we've asked them to put in, which is a generic email. So you just email them, and they will email you back. It'll be somebody who's familiar with our plan, so you're not just getting somebody in a corporate office who's not familiar with our custom plan. And then they all have agent listings. So you can find an agent in your area. Infant County. No, that's fine. Infant County, you choose to join the RIF. You have some options, of course. You can join us and add us as a companion plan. You can add us and then just discontinue your existing plan until, but still allow assets to remain there. You can add us and terminate your existing plan, or of course, you can make no changes. If you were to add us as a companion plan, you would be maintaining 2 plans, our plan and your own. Contributions could be sent to either. We would administer our plan, and of course, Story County would continue to administer its own. You would then still be retaining all the legal and fiduciary responsibilities that you currently have and doing the daily administration. And the only real additional thing is would be coordinating plan limits between the two plans to make sure if you have two plans, you don't get twice the limit, unfortunately. You're still at the 18,000 or 24,000, depending on your age. If you were to add and discontinue your existing plan, no new money would go into the existing companies. We would still just administer our own plan. Missouri County would continue to administer its existing plan until all surrender penalties or restrictions have expired. I know Alyssa has been doing some research. She doesn't believe there's any restrictions or anything with Nationwide. AXA had told us that there aren't any, if they rolled RIF, which they weren't clear about what would happen if you gave participants other options, and I'm not sure if you know for sure with the other companies just yet. So a little bit more research still needs to be done on that. And then you could terminate the existing plan once all the surrender penalties and restrictions have expired. Or you could go ahead and terminate now, and you can give participants some choices. You can either require all the assets to come over to us, or you can give them the option of taking money in cash, rolling into an IRA or eligible plan, or putting it in RIF, basically giving the participants a choice. Any terminated participants already have those choices, so these would really just be eligible for current employees.
But they would be responsible for any penalties that may be associated with the existing plan if we go to this option.
Exactly.
Okay.
If you only choose one provider,
assets can do come over and sign a plan transfer, so participants don't actually even have to open accounts. They would already be established based on the asset allocations from the current plan. If you select more than one provider, that's not really an option,
right.
So the employees would just have to enroll. So if you only have 28 current employees, that probably wouldn't be that big of a deal to get them to fill out an enrollment form and a beneficiary form.
Okay.
So some things to consider, and I know we're still doing some research on this, are there any restrictions or penalties in your current plan? Are there any terminated employees you can't find? And I think she has at least one. And we talked about some strategies about how to find that person. And if you do this, what would be your start date? When would you want to get this going? If you do decide to terminate your existing plan, the IRS says you have a reasonable time to withdraw funds or the funds out of those old accounts. They have not defined reasonable, so what we've told employers is a year. Give people 12 months to get the assets out. You can do it even shorter, but if you have people that are hard to find or are a little stubborn, sometimes you need a little time and two or three letters before they'll get it done. And that's about it. This is my contact information. I'd be happy to try and answer any questions you have.
Could you speak again to, and I touched on it, but I guess I was trying to read and listen at the same time. I didn't do very well. On a Roth component.
Sure. You can have a Roth in the 457. So it's up to you. Do you have that now?
We don't.
If your payroll system allows it, then basically the money's still going into the same account. It's still the 457. It's just coded as Roth. So when the person takes out a distribution, the contributions are never going to be taxed. The earnings may be taxed unless you have an eligible distribution, which is the account has to be open for at least 5 years. You have to have terminated employment and have to be at least 59 and a half or older. But it's not
one of those things that if people don't know what the Roth is, they should really look into it. This is something that interests them. They should be looking for that.
Absolutely. It might be something that would encourage participation.
So to recap, we have 28 employees right now on the four existing plans.
The three.
Three.
And just to kind of break that out, we have Valid, AXA, Equitable, and Nation. Nationwide has, we have 20 employees that contribute to Nationwide. That is our largest provider, and the state does not offer Nationwide. So that's one item to consider.
But I hear you say there's no penalty in moving from Nationwide.
No, I think that information from our Nationwide rep. I think when we, back in 2008, Nationwide did come in as a part of NACO. They recommended it, and they kind of came in and picked up our Kansas City Life contract.
Right.
For those that wanted to do that, so.
So, have you had requests from employees to add another account?
I have. I've had a couple people come and say, I'd like to have this. And I haven't come to the board because I wanted to bring up the package to there. how we got to 28 companies years ago is I believe that every individual just came, I want this plan. This is my company that I currently I wanted to run through. And the board just never turned into anything. I think it's important to us. You know, these are the county plans. They're not you're the administrator or the owner of that 457, the plan sponsor. So the employer does get to make that decision for us who your provider is. We can't have a where you every time one first grade comes with a new company, we'll be back to 28.
Right. No, I understand that. I knew everything that you of the history except how many plans there were. I mean, I didn't realize about where the checks, why there was no check that had been generated. Okay.
Well, and just the administration, having it in-house, right. The administration of right. It. Now, clearly, I am biased and partial to anything called the RIC plan. Yes, it just makes sense to me. So we've been spending the last few years trying to unwind this whole thing. And we haven't gotten it entirely unwound, but we've got it unwound to a point that it's manageable. I am a big fan of trying to get the county out of as much of the day-to-day administration of these kind of things as we can. The question I have, two questions that I have. If we were to discontinue, if we were to add RIC and discontinue, could we do that for a certain amount of time and then finally terminate?
Absolutely.
And so what I'm thinking of there is if we discontinue, it means we're not saying to everybody, you have to move within a reasonable time, which I guess from here we define as a year. But we say we've discontinued all these other plans, and we would like you to look at moving over, and at some point in the future, the county may decide to even terminate those plans, and we're giving you due notice right now that that's what we're doing. That seems the most reasonable to me if, in fact, it is we can move from discontinue to termination down the road. Second question I have is, why would somebody join the RIC plan and only offer one, two, or three of the providers that you have? Why would you not offer your employees the option of all four?
I think some employers do it because they've already had a relationship with one of the providers. Like particularly, we found with public hospitals, they've already had MassMutual and they want to join our plan and just offer MassMutual. Because they join our plan to get rid of the administration, the fiduciary responsibility, and get the lower fees. But they don't want to offer all four providers because maybe they have an agent that's been working with them for a long time and they have a comfort level with that person.
What's the benefit to employees to not offer an all four plans? So I see that you've got an existing relationship, but we're talking about, you know, 250 employees and we want them to have the most robust options possible. Why would you not offer all four?
The only thing I can think of would be it's easier if you have fewer choices. It's easier to make a choice. If you see all four, you might just sort of glaze over and think, I can't decide. So it might eliminate some people from joining if they have too much choice. On the other hand, in my opinion, if you select one or two, then the board has made a discretionary decision about which ones are the better ones or the best ones. So to me, it reduces your liability and your possibility of somebody being upset saying, well, I really wanted this company over here, if you just offer all four and then just really try to educate.
Well, so you're going to hear the other side of that other lure up here, okay? Because this is one of the areas where I don't think that government should be competing with private industry. I told you there was another side here. But we're already in it, okay? So now we're trying to decide what's best for the employees. But if we were being brought today for the opportunity to all of a sudden offer something new, an investment program, I probably wouldn't be for it at all. So now the discussion is, do we want to bring on the government plan or the state's plan and look at phasing out? Because I can't see any reason to bring on another plan if we're going to keep administration long term for the other the three we have now. All right. So I guess that's the option that is attractive. If we're going to bring this plan on, is to get rid of the administration. So,
and legal responsibility.
And legal responsibility. And interestingly, we only have 28 employees because to me, that's only 10%. So it's indicative that there's not a high demand.
I come out of a long-term investment relationship in a previous employer, and I would tell you, if you have, I'm sitting here looking at Oak Forest Man and Valic, and I'm sitting here saying, I'm already in some of these funds, and have had tremendous amount of success over a quarter century. And I tell you what, this is one of the things that you're talking about, both retaining and attracting employees. This is an amenity that you have. Because the thing is, you have the ability as a provider to bring them in at small cost on a educational basis. Because the point being made, you offer too many choices, people won't make a good choice or make a choice at all. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, if you're looking at the long-term success of your employees' post-employment lives, which I would hope that we have that consideration, this would be something that I would welcome the discussion, and I would love to move from the administration side to have somebody else hold that one.
Plus that pooling, absolutely, but the attraction of pooling Story County together with other entities, you said every AEA, and with other entities around the state, then you're pooling like employees. And Loris, it is entirely about, the only reason to do this is to offer a benefit to your employees that encourages long-term retention and good employees.
I noticed you said there were only 5 counties in so far. Is it just a relatively new plan, or is Rick relatively new, or have you just not solicited counties in the past?
We're actually not new. We had a predecessor plan prior to 1979, but in 1979 was when 457D was enacted, and so we've been a plan since then. We just don't market ourselves. If people come to us, that's great. We're here for them, but we don't really have sort of an outreach program.
Can I make one comment? I know there are, we have an L kind of circle in our HR group between cities and counties, and a lot of the counties have the 18 to 30 plan. So they are not ready to make that change. Their board is not ready to reduce the number because they have employees that contribute to those 18 plans that they administer. So, I mean, there are still, fortunately, we only have 3 active, lots that are still out there, but, I talked to a couple that say, eventually they might go look at this, but their board's not ready to make that decision to bring the number of plans down to the 4 that are within the city's plan.
I like Loris, and surprised too that one of my accounts has taken this up, because if this is what is being offered, I think, why not? I guess, being an active investor, being someone that has followed this around, that I can't see what's not the like, but that's just my opinion.
And I don't know how many counties offer it for a council.
I've never looked into that.
I mean, other than the administrative fee, this is at the employee's choice, at the employee's cost. We're not offering matching monies. Where you get in the private sector, I missed that tremendously setting up here because I had a nice little match coming out of the previous job, but I gave that up to do this. But the thing is, you have opportunities here to grow with a commitment of contributions of over a period of time of substantial. I mean, that to me, that's just one of the things as an employer you would be looking to offer a workforce if you could do that on an educational basis and a provision basis. And that's what I see here before us.
So I'd like to see us transition to Rick, if you guys have comfort in that. And I am comfortable with either this continuing for the time being, where we are with our existing plans, and all those, you said we got 8 that are on some of the other plans that are not existing, right? Or go ahead and terminate and just go with a date certain that by this time, if you're 1 or 28 employees, you need to move it over.
I would like, if you're going to go with terminate, I would like to have all that research done. So if I do have some that have left, that I would know what the penalty is if we're able to transition that. I mean, I'll be honest, there are employees that are still in our plans that were gone before I came to the county, which is 14 years ago. So, they're still getting their statements, but they have not moved their money. So, I mean, I would like all those, 20, 25 companies that we no longer really get those terminated within here, if possible, unless for some reason there's a couple that have left within
know, we haven't contributed to those plans since 2008.
So you're more comfortable, so what I just said, you would be more comfortable on the discontinued side moving toward termination
right.
rather than going straight.
But I would like to see us move toward that termination in a year. You know, give us some time to get that research done, figure out exactly if there's any patients or not. Then I'd like to come back to the board and maybe we terminate all those.
Okay, board thoughts.
We need to look at a effective date too.
We're trying to formulate how you make that a motion, listening to all of that. So, find that right.
Yeah, so I would suggest if you guys have interest, I would look for a motion to adopt the RIC program effective July 1st of this year and on a discontinuing basis with our existing plans. So we won't offer that anymore to our employees, but one of our employees who happens to be in one of the plans, if they choose to stay, they can stay until such time as we decide to terminate.
Jennifer, you had said that one of the things you provide, but at a small cost to somebody that adopts this, that you would have somebody that would come here and speak to us.
Yeah.
In that, is there literature that your organization would provide, or would it be through the listed providers, Horseman, MassMutual, Valley, and Voya. I mean, on an individual fund basis, I mean, where would that information be coming from? Or are you just talking about the 30,000 foot view of these are what you have as options, or these are the kind of investment choices that you can make? I mean, what would be, if the county's going to spend the money to have you come to our employees and speak to them, what can they expect?
Basically, we do about a 45-minute PowerPoint presentation with 15 minutes left over for Q&A. That's more than 30,000. This is what a 457B is. This is how it works. This is why you should enroll. And it gives some. We have some really good slides on encouraging people to start now, anticipating what future income needs to be, those types of things. And then what works to me most effectively is to have the vendors there as well. Like have a representative from each vendor, maybe sitting in different parts of a conference room or something like that, that employees can meet with afterwards and schedule appointments to do individual one-on-one enrollment and figure out their best asset allocation.
That's not bad.
Okay, so that's getting them into the new plan. What about getting them out of the old?
The advisors would work directly with them, and then we would work directly also. We have relationships with AXA, with Nationwide. We have contacts there. I know somebody at Kansas City Life, and you can figure out with your other companies who we can contact to sort of grease the wheels, get the forms, figure out all that information.
That would be nice. I mean, just to get away from that would be huge.
And we can take the heavy lifting with that if the board gives us a signed authorization saying that we can act on your behalf with respect to those things.
For the three that we have right now, have we asked if they are able to offer something similar about taking over the administration of their plans?
They don't administer their own plans. That's up to the employers.
Okay.
All right. I mean, if you want to, yeah, the companies provide the financial advisor that works with the employees, but as a plan sponsor, we are ultimately responsible for those. And one thing to keep in mind, every time we have to update that plan document, we do use outside legal counsel. That was approved by the county attorney's office back in 2011, 12.
Are there companies out there that will provide the same type of services as an administrator as RIC does?
I'm not aware of any. I think the cost, there probably would be.
There are.
Yeah.
It's just your original question back when we started this was, well, is that total or is that per employee? And what you're going to get into is somebody you could absolutely find somebody to administer the plans for you and take some of that off our plate. You're just going to be paying rather than the roughly $100 a year you're going to be paying for an employee.
And you could get a family, if you went to Vanguard, Fidelity, T. Rowe Price, or whatever, come in and just say, you have their company's choices. But this is kind of a collection. As offered by individual companies, you can just see by the different companies and their offerings.
Okay.
Sure. Right, and I'm not sure you could pay anyone enough to take on the fiduciary responsibility. Most companies will not be discretionary for you. They will just do the administration. But since we're already the fiduciaries for our own plan, it's no additional fiduciary liability for us to take you in. Because we're already doing everything we need to do for our own plan.
Yeah. Yes. Additional questions, thoughts, or motion?
So we are looking, my supposition, as we just said, would be to move adoption of this proposal from REC to take this into a startup of July 1st. That would give you a window enough, Melissa. I mean, you're going to be working with them on this proposal. Again, the successful adoption of this proposal, you will be turning and working with REC, getting us to that point by July 1.
Yes, and a lot of that information, we can do the training component and different things with our open enrollment processes.
And what would you be looking at then if we go with the dismissal that we're going to go ahead and stop collecting new money as of July 1st for the other plans? Then what would you look at as a likely thought on termination? Maybe July 1 of 2018?
Sure, would be a goal. I would come back and say, you know, these are all done. I mean, I'm hopeful that once we start moving in this direction, that I can contact some of these employees and say, look, that we're looking at terminating these within a year, possibly we need to get this sold out here, your options, and kind of ask and give them a little nudge.
Right, but we need discontinuing as of July 1st. Collecting any money from them, so they can't continue.
Sure, our current employees. I'm also talking previous employees. So any assets that we have that were left even from 2008, I'd really like to work hard to get those rolled over into their own.
Okay. So I suppose the motion would be that we would look to form a partnership starting July 1, 2017, with the adoption of the RIF program.
I think we would look to join the RIC program as of July 1st, 2017.
That's my motion.
Okay, and does that motion, Marty, include discontinuance?
Oh, absolutely.
Or termination?
Yes, so we want to move away from being the administrator of these policies and look to, you know.
But you're not setting a hard and fast termination.
I don't think we can. You can't sit here today not knowing what the administrative side of that is. We only know just cursory.
Okay, so the motion is joining RIC as of July 1st, 2017, and discontinuing our offering of the other plans,
our present plans.
Our present plans,
yes.
I second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion?
None.
Jennifer, go ahead.
I just want to point out here that while my philosophical bent there about competition is a concern, I do agree from a practical standpoint from the benefits of the employees and also the fact that if we even were to put this out to bid to private people or for-profits out there who might be providing the same type of services, we're never going to get this kind of price on it, and for all those reasons, I will support this.
Super. Unless there's ever anything we're missing, anything else we need to know before we take action on this. Okay. Thank you for your work. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
Gene.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. As of July 1st, we will be a member of the Iowa Retirement Investors Club, which I will forever know as RIC. And we will just continue offering our others. And congratulations, Barbara. Next item is consideration of resolutions 1783 approving technical assistance to communities program for fiscal year 2017.
Good morning.
Oh, just barely.
Resolution before you is followed from last week. We're actually to bring it forward today. The program would fund up to $3,000 of total project costs for those communities and eligible communities in Sparta County, and those are defined as communities one of less than 3,000 persons, according to the 2010 census. If approved today, I'll have an email to go out this afternoon, as well as a letter tomorrow morning. Project funding becomes available then for tomorrow morning, and through July or June 1st.
And this is the same resolution that the Story County Board of Supervisors has passed every year for the last four, except for last year.
Yeah, with modifications based on the amount.
Based on the amount, but it's the same as far as the size of cities that we're offering this to. And questions for Leanne?
Not successful. This is something to you.
Okay. In that case, I take a motion.
I would move approval of Resolution 1783, approving the technical assistance to the communities program.
Resolution
17.
And a second.
Motion and a second. You hold up okay over there, Mark?
I am. Thank you for just taking
we're trying
a note on the talking.
Yeah, I struggle with that. It's really hard for me to take a note. Ginny.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 1783 passes. Next is consideration of master plan for the Tedesco Corridor. Mike, thanks for sitting through all this, man.
Oh, you're welcome. And
last guy to say good morning, too.
You made it. Just barely.
By the way, just for the record, the county attorney wanted me to take an hour up here, so.
Yeah, let's go slow.
Just talk slow.
Wow. Boris is feeling great. He's not fading at all.
That might be fun.
So do we get to call this the Tedesco Park? Do we get to call it the Tedesco Corridor? I can't do Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor every time I talk about it.
You know what? I think it's going to be probably the Tedesco Park.
That's a kind of line.
That's good. Is that how you're referring to it in the conservation board?
No, I'm referring to it. However, there are other references out there as well.
Sure.
I'm sure.
Let's see. Yes. I will try to be very brief. You know, I think everyone here is familiar with this project, how we got where we are today, but just to synopsize that, we have been through a master plan development process.